Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hello and welcome to the Following On podcast from TalkSport. I'm John Norman, and for this test match, alongside Jared Kimber, Steve Harmison off on Sir Bobby Robson golf duty for the weekend. So we've let him head off and get a bit of sun and hopefully improve his handicap. And myself and Jared will be looking back at all the action from Headingley and the third test match of the summer between England and New Zealand. So, if you're listening to the show by now, you no doubt know. 225 for 5 is how New Zealand ended up, but winning the toss and choosing to bat again. That's the third time that they've batted, although, of course, they did lose a toss in the second test match, and we all know how that ended up. So, off they set, and Tom Latham was back within the first over. Caught at first slip from the bowling of Stuart Broad, and England's bowlers, well, they kept on top of New Zealand for much of the day until two familiar sounding and looking foes came together to thwart them late in the day. Will Young was the second to go after once again looking good. LBW to Jack Leach, the first ball of Leach's spell. And then it was Kane Williamson, the next to depart, caught behind. Beautiful bit of bowling from Stuart Broad. Couple of in-swingers followed by one that just held its line, and Williamson was gone for 31. When Devon Conway became Jamie Overton's first wicket in test at cricket, then England were absolutely on top, 83 for 4 at that stage, before Henry Nicholls and Daryl Mitchell buckled down to try and see New Zealand through. Nicholls departed in quite extraordinary fashion. You'll hear about that throughout the show. A beautiful cover drive, which would have whistled to the boundary, if not for the bat of Daryl Mitchell. At the non-striker's end, the ball ballooning up to mid-off, where Alex Lees couldn't believe his luck. Jack Leach couldn't work out what had happened. Had to be explained exactly how he had now two wickets in the column. And England were 123 for 5, or rather New Zealand were. And then up stepped Daryl Mitchell and Tom Blundell again. Another century partnership, unbeaten at the close. Mitchell 78, Blundell 45. Although Mitchell, if Matthew Potts had overturned or reviewed a DRS LBW, would have been gone for 8. So a bit of luck going New Zealand's way, a lot of luck going England's. Plenty to look back on. Day one at Headingley, the third test between England and New Zealand.
Story of the day.
So, Jared, I'm going to be honest with you. I always am. You know, like when you have two test series and it's just that feeling of this isn't a series. You need three tests, possibly more. And then more often than not, you have a two test series and it's 2-0. And you're like, actually, it's fine. I don't have to live with another test. And I've kind of felt with this series, to be honest with you, the Headingley test is just a bit like, I'm struggling to see the point of it now. I don't know. Do you share that feeling, or were you just as excited about England against New Zealand third test at Headingley as you were England against New Zealand first test at Lord's, or England versus New Zealand second test at Trent Bridge?
No, well, first test beforehand, I thought we had a chance of an away team winning, which is always fun in test cricket. at the end of that test, I thought, well, England have won the first one, but clearly New Zealand are the better team. So this is maybe the best way of going. Through the second test, I thought, well, there's no way England can chase this again. So that'd be great. But once it's 2-0, you know, I mean, there's a reason why, you know, Davis, no one really follows the Davis Cup once the tie is finished, and you know why the American sports don't play the other rubbers, right? And we play them because we're cricket. Look, I enjoyed the cricket today. It was a grind, a different kind of maybe day than, oh, especially last test where everyone was scoring 500 runs in a day, it seemed like. But yeah, there is a part of it. It's just like, I just feel like as watching Henry Nicholls go out in that way, there was a certain point where it's like, they should probably just go home.
They have, you know, I was working with Jeremy Coney, as were you. And I'm sure that he mentioned on SEN, or I'm still not sure if it's SENZ or SENZ.
But it's SENZ, but I keep saying SENNZ, which apparently is even more wrong. There's no extra N, and I've just put it in.
Well, I've heard people who work for SENNZ. Refer to it as SENS. I was like, how's it SENS when it's SEN in Australia? It doesn't suddenly like morph the last. Anyway, he was saying, look, New Zealand are a conservative side. And they showed that. I mean, I thought that today they showed a conservatism. 2-0 down with, you know, this last one to play. You know, it was a chance to rest Southie. It was a chance to give Henry two games in a row, which he very rarely gets. And when he does get, he makes the most of it. Bracewell at 8, you know, they've gone in essentially with 3 fast bowlers and a part-time off spinner, and they've got to take 20 wickets. I just thought it was a little bit negative, to be honest with you. And I still kind of feel that way, you know. Are New Zealand really going to bowl England out twice?
Yeah, I kind of feel like they've made this huge bet on Will Young being their opening batter, and the obvious thing to do today, if you want a Bracewell to play again, and obviously they like Bracewell, is that Will Young leaves the side, Devon Conway opens the batting. But I'm worried, I wonder if they're just thinking to themselves, are we going to create bigger problems for ourselves going forward if Conway makes 100 opening the batting, or whatever the situation is. But it's funny, I spent a lot of time looking at New Zealand today and thinking about the entire lineup. I think Latham's fine if you take him out. Will Young, I really don't think is going to make a lot of runs opening the batting in Test cricket consistently. I could be wrong. I just don't see him as an opening batter, which he's not been traditionally. Kane Williamson clearly is not the Kane Williamson that he once was, whether this elbow means that's the end. Henry Nicholls, I still think there's question marks over Henry Nicholls. I think he's a fine player. But I still think there's question marks over whether he can be a consistent player, especially if he has to bat at number 4, which he might end up having to do. Outside of, you know, Mitchell and Blundell, who, you know, look like they, you know, bat in any position you give them at the moment, that batting lineup's a problem. Bracewell, look, when no one's attacking him, he'll be on a spinning pitch, he'll be fine. Anywhere else, he's going to go. Do they think Wagner is finished? Do they really trust Henry? There's a lot of questions. Bolt and Southie are very, you know, in Southie's case, he's been playing since he was about 3, right? So, you know, there's a lot of wear and tear on that body. Wasn't that long ago this team looked really good. There's still a lot of talent around, and obviously Jameson can come back into all that, but there's a part of it right at the moment going, it's not so much that I think they're conservative, although what Jeremy Coney said is true. I just think there's probably more questions than they've had. I can't remember the last time I looked at a New Zealand team and thought there were this many questions that were unanswered.
Yeah, I'll go with that. I was surprised that they didn't go with Rashan Ravindra, who we commentated on for the India series. Even just have him in the squad, he is essentially an opener.
Yeah, also don't understand why we would not have him in the squad but have Bracewell in. I like Bracewell and I get it, but it's like, but you have a guy who's a better bowler than him already and is probably a better top order batsman over the whole of his career. I know Bracewell's had some periods where he's been really good. It seems weird to be like, now Bracewell's our guy now. You just said Rashan Ravindra was your guy. Like, you know, pick a side.
And what's he in the side for as well? Is he in the side to bat or to bowl? Because if he's kind of like neither one nor the other, they've kind of been down this path with Mitchell Santner and with Mark Craig. Can you remember him?
I do remember Mark Craig.
Do you know what I mean? These kind of very steady eddy guys that can bat pretty much as well as they can bowl off spin or slow left arm.
I reckon Bracewell's one of those people. You watch him bowl and you think, if he started bowling at 22, a bit like Moinelli, right? But by now, he'd be a really, really good cricketer. But he's 31 and he only just started bowling. So you're literally saying, oh, you just worked out this spin thing. Do you mind just being our number one spinner? Like, yeah. It just doesn't make any sense. It doesn't follow. And also, you look at this lineup for this particular game, Mitchell might bowl, right? But they've gone out of their way not to bowl Mitchell all the way through this series so far. I don't know. There's a lot of
weirdness. Mitchell came into the side as a bowler batsman as well. That was a crazy thing. And it was only 2 years ago.
Mitchell could do every job, let's be honest. He'll be wicket-keeping and be their leg spinner by the end of the week at the same time.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, the other thing with Latham as well, you know, there was... I totally agree. He's. I mean, he may actually be captain as well if Williamson decides he can't do it. The other depressing thing with it is as well, like you talk about all these questions. Well, they're not playing test cricket again now until December. And then they're going to play two tests at home to Sri Lanka and then two tests when England come back. And then that's probably it again for... So it's kind of like, well, it's a little bit frustrating, really. But I just think... You know, I know exactly what you mean. When Nichols essentially hit the ball back and hit Mitchell's bat and went to Lee's, we'll talk about that a bit later. But you just think that first test, sliding doors moment, that no ball, it looked like a sliding doors moment anyway. But the longer this series goes on, it just becomes a bigger and bigger moment. You know, Colin de Granholm getting Ben Stokes out with what would have been the worst shot of the series. And England aren't winning that match from there.
No.
And, of course, they did win the match. And de Granholm then limps off injured shortly after. And they've never recovered, you know. They had Henry Nichols out through COVID for the first test. That mucked around their batting order. I mean, it did work for them because it brought Mitchell in.
Yeah.
Then Williamson misses the second one.
But they made mistakes with their bowling attack as well. Like,
yeah, exactly.
They got their bowling attack wrong at Lords. And because they got it wrong at Lords, they got the right bowling attack for Lords, but at Nottingham.
Yeah. Right? Which happened, which, you know. And I still can't believe that a man like... I know that he's not the answer. It's not like if Ajaz Patel plays, New Zealand win the Test Series 3-0. But it's still crazy. You could come into a test match with three fast bowlers and a part-time off spinner when you've got a bloke who's taken 10 wickets in an innings 5 tests ago or something stupid. So, and it's just really frustrating because it's not like they're heading off to the West Indies where they can maybe bring in back in Ravindra or push Conway up, who I think looks pretty quality, to be honest. Apart from that inside edge problem.
Well, see, this is the thing. I think I missed him out on my list before. But again, I really like Conway. And I do believe he can bat. But I also think people have now worked out that he doesn't get outside edges. He gets inside edges. And is that a thing he can overcome? Yeah. Because he's not young,
right?
Well,
we're not going to know, are we? We're not going to know because...
I'll tell you in December, John.
So, yeah, what was the other thing? Oh, yeah, and of course, they were unlucky with Jameson as well, injured. It's all gone really horribly wrong. And it almost feels like instead of just thinking, you know, sod it, let's just go all in. Let's go all out here for a win. Let's just go for it. They've just gone safety first again. I mean, Southey was just treated. I mean, he may come back and take a fifer. He may well do that, right? And I hope he does because I like him as a bowler. I was there in 2008 in his debut and I've always liked him. You know, I've always kept an eye out for him ever since then. But come on, just give him a break. He looked shot in that last test match. His match figure, if any other bowler gets pummeled like that, I'm sorry, you're out the team the next game. And, you know, he's playing again. It's I found it quite strange. In terms of England, though, well, it just feels like they're in that pure honeymoon period, aren't they? You know, apart from the LBW decision, which they didn't refer, probably because they just wasted one, to Mitchell when he was on 8. And let's not forget as well, Mitchell has had some luck because he was dropped by Root in that first test. He should have been out for 8 today. But essentially, it's everything. Jack Leach taking a wicket in the first over. the Henry Nicholls dismissal. It's just we've been here before with new captains and new regimes. Everyone, you saw it like with about 88 overs to go, all the fielders are, you know, clapping and shouting and cheering on Matt Potts, and you just think, this is brilliant to see. Don't get me wrong, they are all buying into it, and you can see this is a team that can see they want to be in this side. Whereas under Joe Root, felt so sorry for him because they all seemed to want to get out the side. Now they're all coming out of retirement just to get back in because they want to taste a little bit of the Ben Stokes, Brendan McCullum era.
How long does that last, though? Like,
that's it.
Rabada and Nokia. Like, so we thought South Africa would. Sorry, we thought New Zealand would rip through them, and New Zealand's had a shocker. You know, we could talk about all the stuff ups that New Zealand have had, and that's fine and normal. But there's every chance that, and South Africa aren't a better team than New Zealand. But South Africa, you know, whichever fast bowlers they find, have a chance of absolutely destroying England in a couple of test matches. Does that just finish if, you know, Rabada takes 8 for in the first match and Nokia takes 7 in the second?
Look, I wasn't quite buying into this. New Zealand are quite as strong as everybody else seemed to be. They just lost at home to Bangladesh.
True.
They just lost at home to South Africa. You know, they were fortunate to just lose 1-0 against India. But, you know, that's by the by, really. Everybody will lose in India. You know, I know Taylor wasn't the force that he was has been, but he has gone. Williamson's got his elbow problem. And Latham's record against top teams overseas, I mean, you'll know. I'm not sure it quite stands up to scrutiny. So I was I thought their bowling would be better. I didn't think Mitchell would be anywhere near as good as he has been, and Blundell as well, because we saw Blundell in India and his approach was so timid. And to be honest with you, he kind of carried that into the New Zealand summer. So I didn't see those two performing as well as I did. But the thing with the McCullum Stokes effect was it had to work. If it didn't work in this New Zealand series, considering you've got Pakistan away to come, New Zealand away, then the Ashes next year. There's no time, no time at all. So it had to work. I thought New Zealand were on a downer a bit. I thought if the luck goes England's way, you're going to get a bounce back. They're going to be a bit better than what we've seen. It couldn't be any worse. They may win the series 3-0. I certainly didn't see that happening. When it comes to South Africa, I'm still, again, yeah, their bowlers are very, very good. And they will bowl England out. I think they're more likely to win a test. But is their batting really that brilliant?
No.
So, you know, in English conditions, England on a high. I think England could beat India. India are basically coming in for one test and they're going to bugger off again.
Yeah, I think England have a good chance of that one, even though I think India is probably the best test team in the world, just because I can't imagine India are ready for this in any way.
India are the best test team in the world. But, you know, England win that toss, win the toss and the conditions favour them. India just be like, let's just get this done because we didn't want to be here last year. We don't want to be here this year. So they could go into that South Africa series with two test series wins under the belt. They didn't have any last year. I think it could well continue into that South Africa series. So it's after that it gets a little bit more difficult, I would suggest. And yeah, I totally agree. I described it as, do you know, Kevin Keegan is.
It's something to do with football.
Yeah. So basically he's the kind of manager that would go into a dressing room and he's that kind of coach that just makes players believe, you know, he just pumps their tires up. He takes the pressure out of the situation, makes it enjoyable and sends them out. The difference with football is that sport is you can buy new players essentially. You can't do that in international cricket. But the problem with the Keegan thing is it does only last so long.
Look, I mean, I remember working for St. Lucia, I think we lost our first 3 or 4 games. And I wrote a speech for our coach, Brad Hodge, that was basically everything's gone wrong that could possibly have gone wrong for us. And I remember I didn't really know how it would go, but I thought there's no point doing analysis because we, you know, literally our uniforms weren't fitting. Like, what analysis could we do at this point? And I wrote it And then I heard him give it, and he was brilliant in giving the speech as well. And when he gave the speech, he you could feel the room rise, right? And I was like, oh, great. We'll do this all the time. And I talked to him afterwards. He goes, no, that's your one. You get one. And if you win that game, you might win the next game because everyone's feeling really good. But eventually, the quality of the play, the decisions you make, how you put the team together, all those things matter more than getting people up. But you can get professional athletes up. You got to remember, they're not always up. Sometimes they're worried about their mortgage, you know, their wives, their boyfriends, whatever. Sometimes just one moment will bring them together. And I think that McCullum and Stokes as a double act, it makes a lot of sense. But as bad as England were, and I like to make fun of them more than most, they weren't a 1-16 team or 1-17, whatever they were, right? There was always going to be a bounce back.
Yeah.
They didn't even take their two best bowlers to the West Indies, right? Two best bowlers available, didn't take them to the West Indies. They got better almost straight away.
Yeah, and that was always going to be the case, wasn't it? So, yeah. And also, I said this at the time as well. You know, one of the reasons I thought that Strauss might have, you know, just said, just sit this one out, Anderson abroad, was he knew that it would give the new coach and the captain, well, not that we knew there'd be a new captain, but it looked pretty likely. It would give them a choice. If it all went brilliantly at the West Indies, two or three new bowlers came in, the captain is rejuvenated, England win the series, great. If it all goes tits up, bring back the cavalry. Yeah. And maybe I gave them too much credit. Maybe that isn't true, but I did say that at the time. And I think that that's kind of how it's panned out. Don't think Strauss expected Brendan McCullum to be the man, the coach, but
I don't think Brendan McCullum expected it.
Well, he didn't even know about it, did he? Until Rob Key called him. But that brings us quite nicely onto another thing that I was thinking about today. And that was whilst I was watching Jamie Overton and Matthew Potts bowl and Jack Leach to an extent. Look, Anderson missed this test match. We don't know how long Broad's got. So I know that we've talked about it a lot, but, you know, this is going to be the bowling attack, you know, in not too long. Mm. It's going to be, you know, you might get Wood back. I don't know if we'll ever see Jofra Archer play test cricket again. I hope we do, but I have a feeling we won't. Who else is going to come back who I've forgotten about? Maybe Ollie Robinson.
Ollie Robinson, when he gets fit, if he has the chance to also get fit.
Yeah, I mean, maybe Ollie Robinson, but, you know, who's going to be taking the new ball here? You know, Ollie Robinson, are we ever going to see Chris Wokes bowl again for England? Possibly, you know, he's been written off many times, but essentially, this is the attack now. You know, you saw a glimpse of it today, and that 100-run partnership, albeit with the old ball, you know, and it was a bit weird, Jack Leach bowled 30 overs today. That was, I don't think anybody saw that coming, but it was just... I was just quite interested by it, really. You know,
Potts look at Potts and Overton, they are probably eighth and ninth, you know, most talented bowlers, depending on maybe where you put Ollie Stone and Craig and Sam Curran are a bit tricky as well. So, but they're certainly not first choice. But you look at it, and last year, Jamie Overton couldn't hit the cut strip. And last year, no one knew who Matthew Potts was, realistically, right? They're both... I think at their absolute best have had lots of skills that are very handy in test matches. But I don't know what Potts' best skill is because he's not particularly fast. He's not particularly accurate and he's not particularly skillful and he's not particularly tall. He's kind of got a little bit of everything. Maybe that's enough. Overton, it's like, I don't know. To me, he's three wide balls outside off stump from going at six runs and over and really struggling in a test match. You know, based on having seen him play before. So, it's an interest. And you look and you go through that whole list. As you said, Chris Wokes, still, we don't know if he'll ever be able to take wickets overseas. Might never get another chance. Ollie Robinson, until he's one of the most skillful bowlers I've seen in a very long time. Until he can bowl a third spell in a day without looking like he's just done, you know, two packs of cigarettes. They're going to struggle there. I think we know that Craig Overton is probably not an international quality bowler. Sam Curran's probably great as your fifth best bowler. It's really interesting to see what happens next. I mean, obviously, Jofra comes back and you can, you know, put Mark Wood on one side, Ollie Robinson on the other side and Ben Stokes and, you know, insert been here and it doesn't matter. But as you said, we don't know if Jofra Archer will come back. And even if he does come back, we don't know if he can come back. Like, he might play a test and have similar issues again.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like, a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Moment of the day.
I think most of us gave him a bit of space to start with. Because the same thing, you sort of don't know how people are going to work. And he was working hard out there to get through some tough spells and some tough periods. So for that to happen just on a break as well, it's sort of, it's one of those things where you just let someone sort of go through their own sort of thoughts and process it the way they want to. And then afterwards you can chat about it. And I guess see the lighter side of getting out that way.
Oh, yeah, it was unbelievable. I didn't even know if that was allowed. Like, I've never seen anything like it.
Well, there's no doubt whatsoever what moment of the day was. It was a moment so rare that, as you just heard, Jack Leach said he didn't know the laws, as he called them rules, I think. He didn't know if it was out or not. He then went on to say later in the press conference, he didn't know if it was out. He didn't think it was out if a batter hits the ball onto short leg's helmet and it pops up and is taken as a catch.
It's just possible Jack Leach doesn't know the laws.
Well, but don't you think that's quite strange? He's played 25 test matches for England and he doesn't actually know the laws. He's a spinner. Like, that must have happened a lot. You would have thought.
No. You watch Mohammad Siraj appeal for LBW. You watch some of the things that players review. They don't always know the laws.
Fair enough. Either way, have you ever seen a bloke cannon the ball off his strike partner's bat straight into the hands of mid on, was it?
No, I've seen non-strikers get hit and the ball pop up and a bowler sort of be close by. I've obviously seen close fielders get hit and catches come off them. That happens fairly regularly.
Yeah.
Every time I've ever seen the ball hit the bat, it's always kind of gone down because the way you hold the bat in your hand when you're running is not how you hold it normally. You hold it with a very soft hand.
Yeah. It usually flies out your hand, doesn't it?
Yeah, usually the bat flies out your hand or the ball hits it and sort of dies from the lack of energy, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So what was incredible was that Daryl Mitchell managed to get the bat into a position where he middled the ball and that it then found a fielder who was watching. It could have hit the umpire or Alex Lees in the face, right? Because let's explain it, because most people will have gone to social media by now or their friends would have WhatsApped them to them. But just for those who haven't, Jack Leach is bowling to Henry Nicholls. As we know, he's bowling to a left-hander in the first innings, which means he's about to get pumped for four, right? He overpitches slightly. Good shot from Henry Nicholls, but in the air, smashes a straight drive back. The ball is going for four. It's about a second and a half from going over the boundary. Mitchell sees it come back to him and he sort of flicks his arm backwards to get out the way so he could sort of, you know, like a like someone, you know, trying to miss a bull coming at them a little bit.
Yeah.
And instead it sort of goes off the face of his bat like he's doing slips practice. It goes, I'm pretty sure I'm right in saying this, it goes between the umpire and the non-striker The umpire, who was at that end? Was it Kettlebrough? No, it was...
I think it was.
Yeah, it was Kettlebrough.
I don't think it was Murray.
No, it definitely wasn't Murray because he wasn't moving. And Kettlebrough ducks and gets out the way, think he's going to get hit. And Alex Lees, who's at mid-off, should have been looking towards the boundary where the ball was going probably. But for whatever reason, he tracked the ball perfectly. And then the ball comes to him like he's at gully now. Like Mitchell is the right-handed batter and Lees is at gully and he middles it straight to him. And it's a nice sharp catch. It's not like an incredible catch. But considering everything that was going on, he could have easily dropped that and no one would have said that that was a sitter because no one is expecting the ball to be middled from the non-striker's end. The whole thing was so bizarre. And it completely ruins all the figures about how Jack Leach never takes left-handers in the first innings of a match.
Anodyne press conference moment of the day.
They just looked to Leezy and, I mean, yeah, Leezy wanted me to actually mention what a good catch it was.
What is going to happen tomorrow?
OK, Jared, what is going to happen on day two?
Well, it's... how do England get past... I kind of think that Anderson is the best chance of getting Mitchell and Blundell, and he's not in this test. So the second ball is coming, right? So, I think Potts has bowled some really good spells. I actually think Potts' last two spells probably been his best two spells for England, despite what happened at Lord's. But if Potts and Broad don't get a wicket, don't think Blundell and Mitchell are going to worry too much about Overton. It looks like they're not going to bowl Stokes. So a lot of pressure is on that new ball. Now, there's always pressure on a second new ball, especially if you're only four or five wickets down. But in this particular case, I just think that with Bracewell to come, if they don't get a wicket in that first 10 to 15 overs, I really worry about where England can go from there, unless Stokes or Overton pulls one out of the bag, or I don't know. Jack Leach has someone come down the wicket and they smash the ball into their own foot and it runs back onto their stumps and bowls them.
What's the pass score though?
I have no idea. This wicket's weird. Have we talked about the fact that it looks like a barcode? I honestly thought for a minute, oh my God, I've missed it. They're doing their first ever synthetic pitch and no one told me. I Googled Headingley synthetic wicket just in case that they had one of the first hybrid wickets. It looks so weird, this pitch. So I have no idea. Also, like Jack Leach has just bowled 30 overs.
Yeah.
So that makes me understand the pitch even less. And he was on in the 12th, 13th over? I could not tell you what a pass score is. What I would say is, considering how much we know about these two teams, anything over 350 and New Zealand are doing okay. I don't think it's particularly easy. I felt like it was a pitch that you could score runs on, but also help the spinners a little bit and also help the seamers a little bit.
Well, we'll find out tomorrow. Myself and Jared will be back following day two at Headingley. Thanks for listening to Following On.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight. and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.